You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Raiders Kempe motoring in, slips it across, they score! It's Kopitar on the pass from Kempe. Career point, number 998 for the captain.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings.
Doughty sauces over a stick. Kopitar settles with a skate. Doughty, one-timer, knocked down, they score! On the loose pockets, I follow. Right
now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men. When it comes to a starting lineup, everybody loves the starter from Jack Black. Loaded with the superior skincare that the pros love, LA Kings fans can get the starter for just $10, shipping included. Available exclusively at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB, the starter has four of Jack Black's best-selling skincare and shave products, plus a full-size, intense therapy lip balm, SPF 25 in natural mint. Here's to the winning combination of the LA Kings and the starter from Jack Black. $10 plus free shipping available at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB while supplies last. Now, we recorded this episode Sunday night following Saturday night's disappointing loss to the Anaheim Ducks, so take that into consideration when this episode is a little bit of an emotional roller coaster. I think everything we said about Byfield and Moore was probably amplified by their performance on Monday night, so pretty happy about that. Hope you enjoyed the episode.
All right, Jack Jablonski is here with me to talk about the recent spate of games from your LA Kings. Jack, how are you doing today?
It's good. It's been a while since I've been on All the Kings Men, so good to be back.
Yeah, well, it's been a while since we've really done much in-depth talk on All the Kings Men, mainly because of the schedule, but also primarily because it gets difficult trying to find new ways to say the same stuff over and over and over again. So instead, we're going to focus on the new first, and the newest thing to focus on is Quentin Byfield. It's three games, not a huge sample size, but what's your first impression of Quentin Byfield?
I mean, I like what I see. I think I've been pleasantly surprised with his involvement in the play. I think for those of you who listen to the games, Jim Fox did a great job of breaking down the importance of what to look for in those first few games. And, you know, it was no Austin Matthews where he scores four goals in his first game, yeah. But he's around the puck. He's, keeping up with the pace of play. He seems to be getting acclimated, especially in the third game as the games have gone on. And overall, he's starting to look like he belongs. I think he's going to, it's going to take a while for him to find his place and understand the pace of play and the themes within the game. But, you have to be happy with what you've seen so far. It's just a matter of time before he starts getting more shots on net and starts getting around those scoring areas as he gets comfortable within the roster.
Yeah, to the point about him not being Austin Matthews, you're right. He's clearly not. But that is such a small percentage of players that come in and have that kind of impact right away.
Oh, for sure.
And, I'm not sure. Like, to me, he looks – you can see, okay, this kid's going to be good.
Yeah, he looks like he belongs, and he's three games in. He's got a lot to learn. You know, there's a lot when it comes to understanding the pace of play, the ins and the outs of, the dumping the puck and their formation. And it's a great job on the Kings' behalf in the rain that they run the same type of systems with the 1-3-1 and everything on that end. So he's used to the system and the way that we want to play hockey within the organization. It's just a matter of getting acclimated. He's got to build chemistry with players. There's going to be a lot of moving pieces when it comes to lineups, not only the rest of this year and the games that he does play in, but from this year to next year. So you have to keep that in mind. And at the same time, this kid's 18, 19 years old. He's still growing into his body. He's still going to be putting on weight. He's still going to be, figuring himself out, let alone trying to figure out the NHL. So it's going to be a work in progress, but overall, pleased to see what we have.
Yeah. The thing that stands out to me with him is I've been struggling over the last couple of days to try and find the right phrase or the right way to put it. And I still haven't really put my finger on it, but did you ever watch the movie Inception?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you know how they have their little totems that each of them has to have that only they ever touch? because they're the only person that knows the weight, the feel, you know, et cetera.
Yes, sir.
And there's a it's a trope in tons of movies, right? Like when somebody is handed a weapon for the first time, right? And they clearly don't know it. And they know, you know, oh, well, if you knew how to use that, you'd know that the chamber was empty or blah, you know, whatever, whatever. But there is something about muscle memory or, you know, familiarity with a tool or a craft. And when I watch Quentin Byfield out there, the thing that I see that stands out the most to me are just these little moments where you see, okay, he knows how to move the puck and himself through space with purpose and conviction, and he does what he wants to do, right? His passes aren't a foot wide. You know, he's not stumbling or falling or, you know, looking down. You know, he's not getting caught, not, you know, watching the puck with a big hit. If he tries to, you know, whip the puck around the back of his feet really quickly, it happens. And so, yeah, to your point, he needs to put on a little bit of weight. He needs to acclimate to the speed of the game. You can see when he's trying to beat guys on the outside, you know, they're catching him, right? Like he can't blow past people maybe the way he could in juniors or occasionally in the AHL. But the fundamental skills to build on are there, from my perspective anyway.
Yeah, I think, well, one of the things that I think really stuck out to me, and I think this is something that is going to set him apart from your average NHLer as he gets older and gets into his career. And for him in just three games to be able to find space with the puck and time is something that is very hard to do. You know, you see him with the puck and all of a sudden he's got time and space cutting through the neutral zone, or he gets the puck in the offensive zone and he's not, you know, covered right away. He's able to find himself, you know, those areas and those soft spots where he can get it and make something happen and not, you know, have to make those quick decisions with the guy on top of him. So, you know, he clearly understands the game really well. And you and I, you know, have the fortune of, you know, being, you know, behind the scenes with Robleski in the post game press conferences in the AHL and watching those AHL games. And, you know, Quentin wasn't that active in the first half of the season and really turned it on when he started to not only get used to his body after putting on, you know, 15, 20 pounds in the off season, but also just getting used to the game. And for him, if you give him some time, and unfortunately we don't have a lot of time, you know, left in this season and given the amount of games that he's allowed to play. So, you know, it's going to be a great learning lesson for him this season. I think we'll see a lot of growth and attention to detail over the off season. And I think we're going to see a really good Quentin Byfield when we step on the ice next season.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, the fact that it did take him whatever it was, 12 games, 11 games,
14, I believe.
It wasn't just him, right? It was the entire, you know, he had a bunch of guys on the range.
You got, 13 rookies. Yeah. I mean, everyone's learning.
Exactly. But the fact that you could see such a quick learning curve, it really baffles me that one of the takes was low hockey IQ, right? Like,
I don't know who said that.
I don't either. And it's one of those things, you know, you hear the rumors that like, well, if you repeat something three times, your brain just processes it as truth moving forward. So maybe it was just that. Maybe one scout just caught him on a bad night or something. I still think it, and I'm not suggesting that this is necessarily true, but rang's not the right word. It reminded me of some weird, like low key racist stuff in the past about, you know, black quarterbacks can't do it. And so you go like, all right, well, he's a big black dude playing hockey. Like he's got a low IQ. It always made me intensely uncomfortable when people talk about his low IQ, but you watch him playing. And like I said, he not only understands his own body and his relationship to his equipment, but you know, to your point about him finding space, you know, if you've ever watched a race car driver or played Frogger or Tetris for that matter, right? Like there is a spatial awareness that some people are just really good at. And the great hockey players, you know, take a guy like Wayne Gretzky, like, yes, Wayne Gretzky, you know, had the physical ability to pull off the things he did, but the thing that made him really special, and I'm not trying to compare Byfield to Gretzky, I apologize, everybody, but the thing that made Gretzky and made some of the great passers and great players so special was that they saw the game unfold in front of them, right? Like when Pavel Datsyuk goes end to end and blows through five guys and makes two of them crash into each other, it's not because he's the fastest, most gifted physical athlete on the planet. It's because mentally he is seeing something that everybody else can't see. And so I'm not suggesting that Byfield will be as good as Datsyuk or Gretzky. Obviously, we all hope he is. But as an 18-year-old coming into the NHL, you know, to in his three games, I think he led the team in shots against four, if I'm not mistaken. 57.45 Corsi 4 per 60. Sorry to throw numbers at everybody. But that's great. I mean, that's really – and on a team that is struggling to be competitive, I might add.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And for him, I believe he led the team in shots in the first game. And the second game might have been a little bit of a learning curve. And I think it was a little bit of a downer, frankly, for the whole team. They played 50 bad minutes and 10 good minutes, ended up winning. And then obviously got smoked in the last game when Ryan Miller ended up with the win. So congratulations, Ryan Miller. But, you know, back to Byfield. He was active. He was out there. He was moving around. I don't recall his plus minus. I know the top line was minus three, I believe. But, you know, for him to be around the net and to still be creating offense with a dejected team, so to say, I think there's a lot that you can like in the first three games from Quinton. And I think there's a lot that we're going to be liking moving ahead as we see him for the next few games, however many he plays, and then obviously moving forward next year. I think his time in Ontario is probably done.
Yeah, I would imagine, although...
Well, and or, you know, I take that back. He can only play X amount of games this year, so they might send him back for the remainder of the AHL, but, you know, once that is over, I think we'll see Quinton Byfield in an NHL jersey.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if he does not begin next season as the de facto number two center. There's some question, to your point, about the remainder of the AHL season. There has been announced an AHL Pacific Division tournament, but there is some word that it may not. There's labor. I don't want to get into it. I don't know any of the details. I am not convinced that it's going to happen. It would be fun if it did, but we'll see. Two other new faces I do want to talk about though are Gabriel Vilardi and Leah Anderson. Because I jokingly earlier, sort of half jokingly, said let's put Leah Anderson, Gabe Vilardi, and Jared Anderson Dolan on a line together. They were all drafted in 2017. They are at times the three centers on the team. Although for the last handful of games, Vilardi and Anderson have been playing together. And I have liked both of their games together more than I have liked either of their games apart.
You're spot on. You know, that's one of the bright spots I think we can all take out in the last two or three games against Anaheim. For Vilardi to, you know, slowly start to show off some creativity, some physicality, you know, he's starting to find that when he gets physical, he puts himself in the play. He's involved, he's around the puck. And all of a sudden, I think it opens up his offensive game because he's comfortable. I don't know how much of a power forward, so to speak, he was, you know, prior to being drafted and in the AHL, but he's someone that has the size and the speed to be able to be a factor on that end. And we know he has the skills, you know, that's why he was drafted in 11th overall, was a top five pick before he was injured going into the draft. So he's someone that I think we can all hope to see continue what we've seen now in the past few games. And then for Leah Anderson, you know, he's someone that's been up and down and it's a tough gig. You know, the consistency between finding chemistry on lines and, you know, up on the taxi squad, not playing, then down in the AHL with different players and a different, you know, speed, then back up. You know, it's not an easy life for him. And, you know, for him to now be comfortable, looks like he belongs in these few games. Obviously, he had a beautiful goal from a beautiful pass on from Vilardi. But at the same time, you know, he was, you know, right in front of the net grabbing probably the most offensive opportunities in the last few games. And it's something that, you know, you hope to see. You realize that he's also a first round draft pick and someone that, you know, has bounced around, you know, was in New York, then to Sweden, now here. Hopefully he can find his home. And it seems like, you know, in the past few games he has.
Yeah. I said earlier this season that I can't remember what game it was, but Adrian Kempe and Gabriel Vilardi were on a line together. Adrian Kempe drove to the net. Vilardi curled down the right board under the goal line and fed a pass back to the slot, intending it, I assume, for Vilardi to shoot it. For Kempe to shoot it. And I can't remember if Kempe had his back fully turned to Vilardi or if he was, you know, not watching him. But it was clear that Adrian Kempe had no idea that Gabriel Vilardi was going to send him that puck. And I questioned at the time, and I questioned a lot of people about it, and I continued to question about it. Is it possible? Is it possible that Vilardi's line mates just simply need to be aware that he can do that? Because if you're playing with Blake Lizotte or you're playing with Gabe Vilardi, it's two completely different guys, and you're going to have to adjust your game to it. And what we see with Anderson is a guy who seems to be perfectly aware of what Vilardi can do and is almost always available to accept a crazy pass from him.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's chemistry right there. And I think at the same time, you know, and this is something that we don't talk a lot about, but we still have to address it. And there's a large prospect pool that's full of talent below the NHL. Mm-hmm. And eventually they're going to need spots to play. And it depends on the matter of, are those the guys that are capable of playing with guys like Gabe Vilardi and his creativity, or are the guys on the roster able to acclimate and adjust to Gabriel Vilardi's play? Is it Gabriel Vilardi's fault? Is it, you know, there's so many questions that have to be asked. At the end of the day, Gabriel Vilardi is a first-round draft pick. He's going to get the opportunities. We know the upside that he has. He's dealt with back injuries, so I'd say he's a little behind for his age. But for someone who's shown the upside that he did, I think he had 7 points in 10 games to start his career last year. He's been up and down this year. He's been in the doghouse. You know, they've talked a lot about his play in terms of McClellan over the past month and a half. I think we've seen both good and bad. Thankfully, we're seeing the good right now and what Vilardi's able to do. And as you talk about, you know, his connection with Anderson, you're spot on. It's something that seems to be working. It's just a matter of, you know, are there going to be two line mates on Vilardi's, you know, line that can also do that as well? So, you know, maybe we've found one with Anderson. You know, it's a small sample size, but you just have to keep letting it grow, and hopefully someone else pops up on the other wing, and we find two guys that can start moving the puck and create offense and help out, you know, Anze with secondary scoring.
There's a phrase that Todd McClellan used a couple times over the last few weeks, and it's contagious. And I think he was talking about Kempe, Vilardi, and Moore maybe one game. I don't remember. But he was talking about how they were tenacious on the forecheck, and that kind of play is contagious, and it bled over to the other lines, and they wound up having a real good game. I agree that types of play can be contagious. I don't think that it's necessarily limited to tenacity. Tenacity is the easiest one that's contagious. Like, you know, helping out a friend of mine redesign his entire backyard. There's five or six of us. We're lugging heavy bricks around. Nobody wants to be doing it. We're doing it as a favor to a buddy. You know, I'm cracking wise and it's getting late in the afternoon and I'm sort of, you know, winding down and I'm lifting smaller and smaller rocks every time we're going to the backyard. A buddy of mine looks at me at one point and goes, "Man, would you just shut up and pick up a rock?" And I was like, "Oh yeah. Okay. Sorry." Right. And boom, like I'm back, you know, like, back in it. I'm back energized. I don't want to be embarrassed. I realize I'm lagging. I'm not doing my part, right? That's, you know, okay. That's real easy to do. Shot blocking, same kind of thing, right? Like, yeah, sacrificing yourself to do the thing, that's easy. Being creative, being slick, you know, looking for the extra pass, that sort of thing is a little bit harder to create a contagion for it. Because, you know, the impulse, I think, is probably that you're being selfish, and it's certainly a generational thing, right? Like, I see people who watch younger, faster, smaller players, and it's like, well, in my day, they'd be 6'4" and they'd fight all the time. So who needs this 5 foot, you know what I mean? So I don't know. And the Kings were certainly built on a very specific brand of hockey in the early 2010s, and we're trying to transition to a very different brand of LA Kings hockey. So I can imagine if you're a guy like Elias Andersson, who, as you said, has been in Sweden, New York, you know, whatever New York's AHL team is, Ontario, now the Kings, you know, I could imagine that he's probably very aware of a coaching staff's perception of him and a fan base's perception of him and how all of that might impact his career. And I know that Jim Fox has suggested that the team has long-term plans for him, other than what might be obvious on the ice today. And I will trust Jim's instincts on that. But like I said, just little moments. It's not even just the pass that Vilardi did between the legs, right? The self-nutmeg backhand, no look pass across the top, which was great. But just little things, just a simple little dish on the rush, or, you know,
Well, he's finding himself backdoor with pucks and by himself. You know, it's the little IQ or the high IQ in the little moments that we've seen in the last four or five games with Leish Anderson. So it's something that obviously you hope continues. You hope that, you know, Jim Fox is right when you talk about, you know, him having a bigger plan as we move forward. But then again, you also have to keep in mind that, and Todd McClellan made this very clear, I think it was two nights ago, when it comes to what the future is in terms of this season, who's being evaluated and what they're looking for. You know, he talked in, you know, many cliches, but a lot of different things on, okay, who's doing the right things? Who's playing the right way? Who's, you know, following up, you know, in terms of going to the net, the small things that actually matter. You know, you can try to make all these selfish plays or make the pretty pass, but at the same time, you know, everyone's being evaluated, and we're talking from Anze Kopitar's, you know, future to, you know, who's his, you know, future line going to be, to who's going to be on this roster next year. They've got a lot of decisions to make, and for Leish Anderson to be stepping up in a time where it seems that some players are, I wouldn't say, you know, disassociating themselves with the play, but who, you know, clearly, you know, certain players and the team itself, you know, at times can look disconnected and or checked out. And you don't want to see that. But for someone who's battling and fighting for a spot on this roster and stepping up and becoming noticeable in the last few games is something that's going to go far, especially when you leave that last impression going into the offseason. So you hope it continues within the Vilardi Leish Anderson combination, and you hope that other players step up in the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 games.
So that's a perfect bridge into what I want to talk about next, which is that I don't think they should use their final call-up remaining.
Is it just one, or are they still at three?
My understanding is they have one left because Anderson and Byfield counted as two, Clegg counted as one, and so there's one left. Okay. And with whatever it is, however many games left, 6 games left on the schedule, 5 games left, something like that. Well, 2 against Arizona, 1 against Minnesota. So it's, sorry, I should have this.
7.
It's not the time. Yeah.
7
games left on the schedule and 4 of them against Colorado.
Woohoo.
I don't know what there would be to learn from plugging a kid, like, unless we're going to have another situation with a kid that comes in like Byfield where you go, aha, I wasn't sure he'll be ready next year, but now I am comfortable saying Byfield will be in the lineup next year. I don't think there's any player in Ontario that needs that question answered today the way that a Byfield did. Turcotte, you know, was banged up all year, but he has looked fine as far as I'm
concerned. Yeah. The Turcotte is the big question mark, you know.
Yeah, but I'm happy to let it wait. Same with Thomas. Same with all of them. And the main reason is, I have been really optimistic all year long. I have been looking for the silver lining on what was doubtlessly going to be a disappointing season, and I have allowed for every possible explanation for every hiccup in the schedule. COVID injury or COVID protocols, you know, injuries to defensemen,
taxi squad
trades, you know, etc. And you know, the Seattle thing is looming. Like, there's a million, it's a weird season with a million wrinkles, some of them which you know everybody knew was coming, but we didn't quite know how they would hit. Some of them you just couldn't possibly have predicted, right? Like, who knew that Sean Walker was going to take a puck to the face and Matt Roy was going to get drilled into the boards
in the same game?
Like, who knew? Ole Mata and Drew Doughty did not work. Like, okay, there have been things. It's a weird season. It's the second year under Todd McClellan. Having said all of that, when they lost 5 in a row to the Sharks, it was really hard to come up with an explanation that wouldn't upset you as a fan. Like, and that's the difficulty that I face a lot, is that I'm trying to be objective just for the purposes of having a meaningful conversation, because if you just fire everybody, trade everybody, throw them all into the sun, like, it's fun, but it doesn't, that's not a solution, that's silly. That's how you never get better, is by just being overreactionary. But on the flip side, if you just say everything's fine, everything's fine, everything's fine. Oh, well, that's because they didn't practice enough this week. Oh, it's because they practiced too much this week. You know, oh, it's because they have too many guys. Oh, it's because they don't have enough guys. Like, if you just write off everything as being perfectly fine, you're also not going to get better.
Everyone's in the same boat. You know, everyone's going through the same situations. A lot of teams, if not all of them, have dealt with COVID. The Kings find themselves in a weird year. And I know where you're going with this, and I'll let you speak further on it. Disappointing, yes. I think we learned a lot, and I think there's a lot more to learn. But I don't think there's a lot of questions that have been totally answered yet. And, you know, that's up to management to find those answers. You and I are obviously on the outside of that conversation as much as we'd love to be on the inside. But I think that we still don't know enough or haven't totally figured out where I'm going to talk about the forwards specifically, where a lot of those bodies are going to be next year.
Yeah, well, so that's why I'm not interested in using that final call-up, because like I was saying, those losses to San Jose, was it 5 in a row? Was it 4 in a row? This season's sort of a jumble, but at March 2nd, 3rd, 9th, and 10th, with a loss to Arizona thrown in the middle there, those were rough. And then every other team in the division that the Kings needed to lose in order to keep their playoff hopes alive, the schedule kept breaking exactly the way the Kings would need it to, right? Minnesota wound up being really good. St. Louis wound up struggling. Kings did really poorly against San Jose, but they did really great against the Blues. And so we find ourselves, you know, whatever it was, 2 weeks ago, with two handfuls of games left, and you know, playing against these teams that they need to beat. And they didn't, it's not that they lost, it's how they lost. And it was the same thing last night in Anaheim. It's Ryan Miller's last game. It's one of the greatest American-born goaltenders of all time, blah, 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 blah. But to your, you know, as you said, they played 50 bad minutes and 10 good minutes at the end of that one game that they won. And I can't tell you how many times I've been texting with people during games where it's just like, man, this game is boring. Like, it's just boring. And if you lose a boring game, that's to me worse than if you lose an exciting game, which just seems like a silly statement. But like I said, there are a million questions, or as you even said, there are a million questions that need to be answered. There's the Seattle expansion draft. There's free agency. There's all the kids in Ontario. Like, this team is about to reach a point where hard decisions have to be made, the kinds of decisions that will sort of set the course of the franchise for a while. And I've been totally fine the last 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, depending on, well, maybe not five, but depending on how far back you think that this reconstruction, reimagine, rebuild, whatever you want to call it, started.
I'd call it 3 years. We started losing a little bit before that, but I think that's kind of when we started to turn the tables.
Yes, personally for me, it was the acquisition of Cal Peterson, even though that happened before the season that they made the playoffs and went on to Vegas. But the point is, we're a month or two out from all of the preamble being done, right? The big contracts have been traded, right? The guys that were here when the Cups won are gone. You know, it's Kopitar, Brown, Quick, and Doughty at this point. Doughty is great. I don't have any complaints about Drew Doughty. Jonathan Quick is still capable of turning in a strong performance. And next season, I have to assume Cal Peterson is going to be the starter next year. None of this 50-50 split, you know, COVID season type thing. And listen, Andrzej Kopitar is still putting up a point per game, what have you, this season. But next year, I don't know, man. This, like, you know, make me a list of guys that you absolutely positively know are going to be on the roster this year. And this is a short list. And I don't say that to be critical. I just mean, like, there's a ton of guys in Ontario. There's free agency. They have tons of cap space. There's trades that, like, at some point you have too many guys. You have to start making trades. And to tie all this back to what I was sort of originally saying is, I don't know what the point of bringing in a kid like Akil Thomas into this dead spot in the season where the games do not matter. the team is clearly, there's something wrong with them on the ice. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to even speculate, but the games are not exciting. And it's not, I don't even think you can pin it on an individual, right? Like, it's a collective ennui. And I just would take Brian Burke's lead. And I would leave the kids in the minors. It's because it's what, seven games. What are you going to learn in seven games?
I'll leave it at that.
All right, perfect. I didn't mean to be depressing about this because, I mean, I do think we're about to reach a really exciting spot in franchise history.
I completely agree, and I'll step in here because I think that moving towards next season, this offseason, I think, you know, it's going to be active. You've got the Seattle expansion. Kings have a lot of cap space. You know, you hope slash assume that there's going to be a trade that can really help bolster this team up and get into the win now mode. You know, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, in terms of, you know, this rebuild, this adjustment of what Kings hockey is going to be, this new brand, we're 2 years into it with Todd McClellan, and we've seen the bright spots. Seven game winning streak 2 years ago, when they started playing the way that McClellan wanted them. Then we, hit COVID, and that ended that little run. You look towards this year, they're in the playoff picture with, you know, 20 games to go. Going into this season, I think you and I and a lot of, you know, Kings Nation said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they missed the playoffs. Would I be surprised if they made the playoffs? Maybe. And that's exactly where they were. They were in a position where they were contending with 20 games to go. They've fallen out, but I think that we still have seen the upside of some of the top players. You know, Doughty's had a spectacular year. Cal Peterson was phenomenal early on. He's gotten no help in the recent, you know, 8-9 games. Kopitar, you know, you can't ask for a better performance for him to start the year. It's tailed off a tiny bit, but so is the team. So we've seen the capabilities of this team being able to contend. Now it's a matter of management and the players stepping up to become that win now playoff team that all of a sudden has the bright future that we've been talking about for 3-4 years. It's prospect pool this, prospect pool that, you know, Quentin Byfield, Alex Turcotte, Kapari, you know, Vilardi, all these first round draft picks that we're so impressed with and can't wait to see. Next year is the year that we're going to have to see it. You know, the clock is ticking. And at this point, you have to assume that next year is going to be the, okay, now we're ready to start wrecking havoc. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think you have to imagine we're going to see an active offseason, and hopefully that we see these young kids starting to seep into the lineup much more than we did this year. You know, we saw Mikey Anderson cement himself. Toby Bjornfoot, he's started to do the same thing. Two rookies on the back end. You get a year of, you know, NHL hockey under your belt. Hopefully they can come back for their sophomore seasons and really take that next step. You know, for the, you know, the forwards, they're a little bit behind in terms of, you know, cementing themselves. But there's, you know, let's face it, Jesse, there's probably 15 names that you can name off, as you just talked about, that could be on the Kings roster that are in this organization just fitting in that bottom six. And that's where you talk about that small list of who's going to be on this team next year that we for sure know. You know, it's going to be interesting. I'm excited because I think it's going to be a nice little refresher next year, but it's been stale right now, and it's unfortunate that we have to see it that way.
Yeah, I do want to highlight what I think of the positives, though, just so this doesn't sound like I'm saying, yes, woe is me, all is lost or whatever. I think that the play of Tobias Bjornfoot and Mikey Anderson, I just cannot say enough positive things about it. And I am not suggesting that we have two, you know, Norris Trophy level defensemen right now. Obviously, they're young. Obviously, mistakes get made. But, you know, Jim Fox asked Mikey Anderson about a goal that was scored on him by Kirill Kaprizov. Again, you know, yeah. Those who can't see, Jack's flashing a big Minnesota Wild fan smile there. But Mikey Anderson knew how he got scored on, right? He did not have any, and he didn't sound glum or down in the dumps about it. It was very matter of fact. He just said, you know, listen, here's what I thought was going to happen. Here's what I tried to do. Here's what actually happened. And I got a goal scored on me. So, okay, goes in the mental database.
Yep.
Won't happen nope. again. Moving on. And, you know, Tobias Bjornfoot has had some really high, outstanding moments, and he's looked like a 19-year-old rookie in other moments. So whatever. But moving forward, like, those are two names that I would say absolutely are going to be on the roster next season. I mean, barring some sort of blockbuster trade where one of them
yes.
maybe is sent out. Like, I don't know what spot they'll play on the left. Like, what, you know, I don't know that Mikey Anderson will forever be the number one D partner for Drew Doughty, although that is what I'm personally rooting for. And I don't know that Tobias Bjornfoot will always be with Matt Roy. Maybe they do somehow find a way to get that unicorn left shot defenseman that they think will somehow unlock the power of the top pair. And those two guys bump down two pairings. Great. Fine. Right. They'll be on the lineup. And to me, that was an important question heading into the year. I mean, you haven't highlighted it when we did our 10 questions facing the Kings. Biggest questions facing the Kings heading into the season. That was it, because you had Doughty, Roy, and Walker on the right side.
And you did not have a clue what was going to happen.
You had Curtis.
You're like, Olimata.
Yeah.
Olimata, we brought him in, and obviously that didn't work out, as you mentioned right. earlier. But you're right. You know, those are two extremely bright spots. You know, that's a pair of defensemen that you could realistically say is on the Kings roster for the next 10 years. And I think that's saying a lot.
Yeah. And if we're using the model, and it's a super oversimplistic phrase, but if you're using the model of building from the back out, as I said, I think this all started when they got Cal Peterson. Cal Peterson this year, as far as I'm concerned, demonstrated that he can be a number one goalie. You know, he struggled a little bit recently. I can't remember how many games in a row he's lost. Somebody said it on the last
9 of 10, I believe now.
Yeah, and listen, this is not great, but I have faith in the Kings goaltending staff, and he hasn't had any help.
McClellan addressed that in the post game against Anaheim after they lost 6-2, and someone's brought up the Cal Peterson situation of now it's 9 of 10. He said, "Listen, you know, Cal can be better, but at the same time, he has been left out to dry in most of those games." And we saw that with Jonathan Quick last year and the year before as well. And you hate to see a career like Jonathan Quick go by, you know, missing out on some of these years. And, you know, thankfully he's been pretty healthy this year. Does he end up in Seattle? You know, we hope not. But at the same time, you know, that's a solid 1-2 punch if all of a sudden these guys are getting help and we're scoring more than one or two goals a game. You know, the past 3 years, we've talked about how we've got to score more. We saw it early in this year. All of a sudden, the power play was in the top five, the top 10. It's gone cold, ice cold. And we've seen the power play drop. We've seen the numbers of goals for the Kings drop. And we haven't been able to score 5-on-5. So that's a huge factor when it comes to being able to help out the goaltender. It's not just the defensive zone, you know, pressure. It's not just the stability behind, you know, in our own zone. But if we're not scoring goals, every single goal we give up is that much more stressful on the goalie and the defensive pair. So there's a huge chain reaction, and it filters all the way down to the reasons we're losing. You know, we've got into him enough, but at the same time, you're right. Cal Peterson has shown he can be a number one goaltender in the NHL. He's someone that I believe is going to be that stable number one moving forward next year. But at the same time, you know, you've got to score goals to win games, and the Kings haven't. And because of that, you know, these guys are being left out to dry, and all of a sudden it snowballs 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 goals against Anaheim. You know, it's stuff like that where
that
you
game
just feel bad for the goalie. But
the team is being, you know, when Dean Lombardi took over and everybody called it a rebuild, and I would strenuously disagree, and I would say it's not a rebuild, it's a build. Because the team doesn't have anything. They're not building
around. There's nothing to redo,
Yeah, they're just building a franchise essentially from the floor up. Kopitar, Brown, and Quick were already in the organization, but they weren't established pillars that you construct around. Kopitar was, you know, I think Kopitar's first season was Dean Lombardi's first season as general manager. So he had been drafted, but he wasn't Anže Kopitar. This time around, as I said, Jonathan Quick has been there. Kopitar has been there. You know, they had those guys, the cup winning guys, for a few seasons as they acquired pieces. And I feel like they've been meticulously creating this new identity. And so you've got Cal Peterson. Now you've got 5, if not 6 of your defensemen that I feel really not just comfortable, but like happy about going into next season with. Like I said, the pairs may be what they are, but Anderson, Doughty, Bjornfoot, Roy, Walker, Mata, you know, whether or not you're going to call up Strand or Clegg, like how many defensemen have stepped into the lineup this season? And you go, oh, okay, cool. Like, I'm all right. Yeah. Cale Clegg and Austin Strand is your third pair. We're not going to get our heads caved in. Cool.
Yes.
Good. And so next season, now you go into next season with an actual foundation built on defense and goaltending. And now, right, not the last seven games of this season, again, to bring up my point about not, I mean, if they use the call-up, whatever, I'm not going to cry about it. But heading into next season, now you have a blue line. Now you have a net tandem with you know, all, no disrespect to Jonathan Quick. Like I said repeatedly, I think he is the most important King in history. But with Quick and Peterson in net and those defensemen that I just rambled off, and I think, you know, obviously Kopitar and Iafallo are going to be, you know, they're probably going to be the top line. Quentin Byfield maybe is your second line center. Velarde and Anderson, I would imagine they have plans for moving forward. A guy like Trevor Moore has clearly established himself. Like, what a season. Well, let's talk about him. Put a pin in him. We'll get back to him in 2 seconds. Adrian Kempe, right? I think they need to sort. I think they need to settle on what they expect out of him, not what they hope out of him. But then next year,
the rest of the lineup:
up Turcotte, for grabs. Kupari, Thomas, Matt, Fogamo. You know, all of those guys. Now we start. Now we start plugging in the offense.
They're all on different timelines, and some of those timelines are in the okay. Now we should probably start giving them a try. Not all of them are there yet. Some of them still need to. Did we mention Kaliev either?
No, Kaliev too. Sorry, I forgot him completely.
So you look at all that, you know, those names need a spot to play. And you mentioned, you know, 5-6 names that are all going to be on the Kings roster. The rest of them, you know, it's up for grabs. And some of those names are ready come, you know, game one next year. Not all of them. Again, you know, I think some of them still really need to understand how to fit in the body. Some need to grow. Some need to get stronger. Some need to put on weight, et cetera, et cetera. But some of them are going to be ready. And, you know, they need that shot. So it's a matter of who's on the lineup next year, who's out, who's been here the last few years that is no more. It's really interesting. I can't wait to see what happens because, again, as you and I have talked about, it's stale right now. But, man, I think it's going to be fireworks next year, especially with all this young talent finally getting an opportunity.
So let's talk about Trevor Moore. When a new player is acquired by the franchise, and their role is like bottom six, you know, energy line, agitator, grinder, whatever phrase you want to use to talk about the new player. The first thing that I immediately lapse back into is the first game I can remember seeing Ian LaPerriere. It's not necessarily his first Kings
game. Little lappy.
But it's the first game I remember because I remember going to the Forum, no idea who this guy was. I think they got him in the trade for Gretzky, if I'm not mistaken. And I was like, okay, whatever. Like, we just traded Wayne Gretzky. None of these guys is ever going to be, you know, whatever. And I just remember sitting there in section 12, row 9, seats 1 and 2. And that dude hit everything that moved, right? Like, he flew around. He was just, I mean, he was Ian LaPerriere from the second I first saw him.
Yeah, a little ball of hate type.
Yeah, and it's absolutely unfair to try and compare any incoming player in a bottom six role to that thing. So I think when they got Trevor Moore, I think I was judging him against that memory, right? And the memory's probably exaggerated, right? LaPerriere probably had like three hits in that game, and I just happened to be vain. But Trevor Moore came in, and I don't know that I could tell you one skill or one thing that Trevor Moore does that he's the best at. But he's so good at every skill, right? Or he's very good at every skill, right? Like, is he the best passer on the team? No. Have I seen him pull off some incredible passes? Absolutely. Does he have the best shot on the team? Absolutely not. Have I seen him, you know, take some really great shots? Sure have. Is he the team's biggest hitter? No. But as somebody on Twitter pointed out, he ran down Zdeno Chara a couple of years ago. and when he's on a line with Grundstrom and Jared Anderson Dolan, all of a sudden, two guys that are not flashy players are hooking up on some incredibly flashy plays. You put him with Leish Anderson and Gabriel Vilardi, and all of a sudden, two guys that have not been executing flashy plays are suddenly executing flashy plays. And there's something about a guy like Moore who creates space through his agitation, tenacity, whatever you want to call it.
Effort.
Yeah. And players like Vilardi and Anderson and Grunstrom and Anderson Dolan, when you give them that space, that's when they're able to do the creative things that other guys can't. And it's why I like Iafallo with Kopitar, right? Everyone always says, oh, Iafallo is a third line player. Like, nonsense. Iafallo is a top line player. He goes in and creates the space and the opportunity for Kopitar to do Kopitar things. You know, it's what Tony Granato did with Wayne Gretzky. It's what tons of players.
Name anyone that Sidney Crosby has played with.
Yes, exactly. Chris Kunitz. you know, and so I just, I mean, we haven't gotten the ballots yet, but I am absolutely voting for Trevor Moore for Unsung Hero. You know, he's great. I just think he's
had a really good season. I mean, everything he has done this year is really grown on us, I think. Because early on, he was just another one of those names who was in the pile of, well, we got to figure it out. Maybe he belongs, maybe he doesn't. And he's done everything in his right mind to show that he belongs not only in the NHL, but on this Kings roster moving forward. You know, everywhere he goes on the ice in terms of who he plays with, he makes them better. He's, you know, a forechecker who is absolutely relentless. He doesn't care how tall the the defenseman is that he's going in to go after the puck. He's going to go in hard. He's going to do everything in his right mind to get that puck. And that's his game. He's a guy who's just nonstop. And he's someone that I think, you know, McClellan has used this on a few other players within the organization, but he's someone that players want to play with. And that's something that I think speaks loudly to the type of player that he is, and frankly, the type of player that he's developed into as he's gotten more ice time, deservingly so this season. So, you know, is he on the roster next year? You'd like to put that name down in the smaller list that we have slowly developed over this podcast. But at the same time, you know, I can't say enough good things for a guy who came in from a trade and established himself as someone who is someone that you want to be with, and not, again, as the most talented player on the team, but someone who's clearly made a difference every time he's stepped on the ice. You know, he's had many, many more noticeable games than bad games. And McClellan's talked a lot about that. So I think, you know, you'd like to see a lot more of him moving forward. And I think he's someone that the Kings fans should be excited about, because this guy is the type of player that's going to be a role player on a team that's successful. He's not going to play 25 minutes a game, but he's going to go out there and he's going to make plays. And for him to, you know, put up the numbers that he did this year in the limited amount of ice time, it's impressive, because he's a secondary, you know, playmaker, secondary, you know, scorer on this team. He's someone that's going to be, you know, a part of that depth squad. But by all means, man, he's a guy that you want to be in the depth squad.
Yeah. All right. I think we're going to wrap it up there, Jack. We've rambled on long enough. I know you got places to go, things to do. Kings fans, 7 games left. It really has been fun having fans back in the building. So I would encourage you to come out if for no other reason than just to soak in the atmosphere of Staples Center. It feels really nice to have fans back. Jack, thanks for joining me.
Always good to be back.
Thanks for listening, Kings fans. We'll talk to you soon.